My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the great pleasure of speaking with James Lee Burke. Welcome back to KBOO, James.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Ed.
Do people call you James or Jim?
Jim's fine.
Jim, yeah. I can call you
sure,
Jim? Thank
yeah.
you. The title of your latest book, how many novels is this now?
23 novels, one collection of stories.
What do you do in your spare time?
Oh.
I mean, it takes me a year to squeeze a book out when I can do it at all. But, okay. The title of this book is In the Moon of Red Ponies. It's published by Simon & Schuster. And people probably know you best from the Dave Robichaux series, the series that takes place in southwestern Louisiana,
yeah.
ex-New Orleans detective, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I think people want to know, when a writer has a successful series, why do you create a new series character? What motivated you, for example, to do this?
Well, we meet Billy Bob Holland in here. He's an ex-Texas Ranger and an ex-U.S. Assistant U.S. Attorney. But he's a member of the Holland family about whom I've written for over 30 years. I've written a number of novels about the family. So he's really an old character rather than a new one.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to give him his own series, did you?
Yeah.
What about him interested you? Why him, for example, other than your other characters?
He shares similarities with Dave Robichaux. He's from Texas originally. In this novel, he has moved to Missoula, Montana. But he's one of those for whom the historical West, the frontier, is still very much alive. And his ethos is, it's an egalitarian one. I think he represents what's best in our country.
Are all people named Billy Bob actually named William Robert?
Yeah, that was my first cousin's name, Billy Bob.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought Billy Bob was just like your given name. But I'm from New York. What the hell do I know?
It's fairly common in the South.
Like, okay. Mm-hmm. Billy Bob is an attorney, a defense attorney now.
That's right.
Yeah. He has a wife named Temple Holland.
That's right.
And Temple is, she's a private detective?
Yeah, she works for an attorney. She's an investigator.
Exactly, yeah. Of course, exactly. You know that. Mm-hmm. One of the early characters we meet here is a man named Johnny American Horse. That's a wonderful name. Johnny American Horse is, as you might suspect, a Native American. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about Johnny American Horse.
His ancestor in the novel was Crazy Horse, who, of course, was a visionary and an Oglala Sioux holy man. And Johnny American Horse is also half Salish or Flathead Indian. He's a veteran of the First Gulf War and a recipient of the Distinguished Service Cross. He appears to be delusional sometimes. Some people think he has Gulf War syndrome. Other people dismiss him as a drunk. But in reality, he's something messianic about him. He has an obsession about seeing the earth restored. And he has friends who are considered eco-terrorists. And he's incensed by the fact that there is a company operating in the United States that did arm Saddam Hussein with these biochemical agents when Saddam Hussein was the ally of some people who were running the government back in the 1980s.
Well, you know, it's always dangerous for an interviewer to tread on the plot, but I think you've just told us a major thing about the plot, which is okay. And you don't really learn this until later in the book.
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of other stuff happens. One of the things that happens is a guy named Wyatt Dixon. Now, I really love Wyatt Dixon. I think that Wyatt Dixon is a classic James Lee Burke character. And the reason I say that is he is full of mixed... He has motivations are mixed, his feelings about things are mixed, and he himself has a really ugly history with Billy Bob Holland and Temple especially.
Yeah.
And yet, you don't really know what to make of him in this book. Tell us about Wyatt Dixon.
Oh, Wyatt Dixon is a great character.
Great character.
To say.
One of the things I love about talking to you is you have more fun doing an interview than anybody I ever met.
Well, thanks. You know, Wyatt Dixon is a career ex-convict, a recidivist who's been in and out of pens for years. He's like Billy Bob. He's from Texas. He's homegrown, brother. And he's a rodeo clown. And when Billy Bob first has trouble with this guy in the novel Bitterroot, he at first simply dismisses Wyatt as a sociopath, except, unlike the sociopath, Wyatt Dixon has this enormous physical courage, and he has a peculiar kind of integrity. And nonetheless, he's done some terrible deeds, including burying Billy Bob Holland's wife, Temple, alive in Bitterroot.
This is not good practice even in Texas.
Not even in Texas. And Billy Bob then discovers in the first chapter of the new book, In the Moon of Red Ponies, that Wyatt has been released from Deer Lodge Prison. He's back on the street claiming to be reborn. He's evidently been through electroshock treatment.
And got religion right after that.
Well, he claims that. And so that's part of the mystery of the book, that we're not quite sure about Wyatt's motivations. But he shows up in a very genuine way. And when he calls Billy Bob up and says, "Well, howdy doody there, Mr. Holland."
He has a wonderful way of talking. He's so disingenuous. He comes across like a total yokel bumpkin with nothing going on between his ears, and especially when he talks to cops.
Yeah.
When he talks to cops, he becomes the dumbest son of a gun in the world.
That's right.
And yet there's something going on always in his head.
And in the meantime, he's been writing letters to President Bush and using Billy Bob Holland as his reference.
Without asking, of course.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. When you write, do you laugh when you write?
I do.
The thing is, I always say to people, if your book doesn't amuse you, there's really no point in doing it. tell me about, this is the first Billy Bob Holland book I've read. Forgive me but it's true. Tell us about L.Q. Navarro. What is the story with L.Q. Navarro? This is, when you talk about Johnny American Horse being a visionary and seeing things, Billy Bob Holland also sees things.
That's right. Billy Bob Holland was a Texas Ranger and working down on the border with his best friend and his partner, L.Q. Navarro. And both men, though, were rogue cops, and they were making nocturnal raids into Old Mexico, carrying out a vendetta against some Mexican drug traffickers who had tortured a DEA agent to death. This is based on fact, actually. And one night on one of those raids, they got into a firefight with some dope mules, and Billy Bob accidentally killed L.Q., and he's haunted by the fact that he shot and killed his best friend.
Mm-hmm. And he sees L.Q. Navarro.
That's right.
And L.Q. Navarro advises him. He's like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, he's there. He kind of hovers on the edges of Billy Bob's consciousness, particularly at sunrise and at twilight. Billy Bob sees him in strange places.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of strange goings on in this book. The thing, when I said that you're a master of mixed emotions and mixed motivations, I think, I don't know, did you purposely set out to do your characters as complex as possible? And if so, is it because you think that's the way life really is, or are you just trying to create a better book?
Well, it's both, of course. I think ultimately the challenge to a writer of drama, of any kind of drama, is to explore the complexity of the characters. That's what makes great art, ultimately. We read Shakespeare not to rediscover the Elizabethan theater, but to learn about ourselves. And so Hemingway put it much better than I could. Hemingway said, writing is the most difficult art because you must spend you must first learn the craft and then spend a lifetime learning the subject, the nature of the human family.
Yeah, first you have to learn the craft, then you have to spend the rest of your life trying to rise above the craft in some way also. Forgive me for saying it so bluntly, but you have a political agenda in a lot of what you write. And I say that in the best possible way.
Uh-huh.
Because you're right now you're talking at a station where that kind of thing works really well. So when you write about Louisiana, for example, one of the groups that you're hardest on is the petrochemical industry and how they've destroyed the bayous and how they've destroyed the political life in Louisiana. And you pretty much transplanted that mindset to Montana as well. Is that a fair statement?
I don't try to. I try not to use art to proselytize. because then it simply becomes didactic and it's no longer art. My own feeling is what people sometimes term politics is just a categorical name for behavior. People's politics ultimately are what they are. And politics is something, it's a dead end. It's a cul-de-sac. And it's, how does Billy Bob Holland describe his wife's view of politics? She calls it the province of fools and idiots. Well, it's a carnival. But in
and
truth,
its best days, it's a carnival. And its worst days, it's a travesty.
Well, often. I mean, it's, you know, the man who understood the science of politics best was Machiavelli. And, you know, of course, he was a very cynical and amoral teacher. But I think, unfortunately, too many professionals subscribe to his beliefs. But anyway, as you said, that there are things going on in our life. I think we're at a junction, historically, a juncture, where we have to make certain decisions as to whether we'll survive as a republic and maybe ultimately we have to decide if we wish the earth and the human family to survive. I think we will. But that said, there's no question that there are people who would turn the earth into a gravel pit or who would turn it into a place where the Jeffersonian dream that most of us venerate, that would like to see grow and grow and grow, would be canceled out. I don't want to be hard on the petrochemical industry. My dad was a natural,
since when?
Since a natural gas engineer. And we're the people who buy the products.
That's true.
But in Louisiana, let's put it this way. If people want to see the future under a petrochemical empire, they need to come to Louisiana. They're looking at the past, but they're looking at the national future, too. If that's what people want. Now, I worked in the oil business myself. I was a land man. That's the guy that finds open land. I was a pipeliner, and I worked a little bit in the oil patch. And I have enormous respect for the grunts on the ground who do the work. But in Louisiana, which in many ways is like a third world country, and I don't say that facetiously, the old oligarchy has disappeared, the plantation society that characterized the antebellum South. But it's been replaced by a corporate one. That's just a sociological evolution. But these guys do business with baseball bats. And anyone who thinks otherwise is whistling by the graveyard. It's nonsense. They'd be the first to tell you.
Most people don't even realize that, though. It's not that they're trying to suppress it
or deny it.
They don't even realize it.
No. This is the way they do. So you want the oil, we'll go get it for you. Look, there's a great film called The Formula. Did you ever see that film?
About the artificial gasoline. That's it.
Marlon Brando. He's this totally unscrupulous oil man from Texas, and he and one of his friends are having a drink, and his friend says, hey, WJ, them damn Arabs sure been causing a lot of trouble, ain't they? And Brando says, Bub, haven't you figured it out? We are the Arabs.
People need to hear that. I never realized how bad it was until I drove through Louisiana into Texas, and the first thing you come to is Port Arthur.
Yeah.
Now, there is no doubt in my mind why Janis Joplin left that place as soon as she could. This is the ugliest vision of hell I have seen on Earth. And maybe I haven't been that many places, but this is the ugliest place I've ever seen.
Well, that's the downside to energy-consuming society. I don't think it has to be that way. I don't believe it has to be either or. You know, can use the earth and use it in a way that's, but put it this way, currently under the new administration's IRS tax laws, a person who uses a SUV in his business or her business over 50% of the time can receive a tax deduction of up to $100,000. Now, it's obvious what the agenda is, to encourage the largest consumption of oil possible.
So doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, not unless you know you own a
sell
lot
oil.
Of stock.
Yeah, that's right. Unless you're an oil guy.
Yeah, but I don't.
And there aren't too many of those in the administration, are there?
Yeah, but anyway. Yeah. Far more intelligent people than I have written about this stuff.
Well, we'll get back to your book in a second. And the book we're actually discussing here is In the Moon of Red Ponies. James Lee Burke is the author. Simon & Schuster is the publisher. Now, you share, I guess, Johnny American Horse's view of the earth as a sacred thing, our mother. Is that fair?
Yeah, I believe that absolutely. I think everything in creation was it's an extension of a spiritual reality. That's my view is kind of Emersonian, I guess, or Plotinian. But the earth is something that will not always replenish itself. That's a terrible assumption, and it's not to be abused. And if we abuse our environment, I believe in the biblical notion that we're extensions of the clay. We, in effect, systemically injure our own lives.
Mm-hmm. The only animals that are known in nature to foul their nests are ones that are on the verge of extinction, so that's kind of scary.
Well, I think we're it's time that we take a cautionary look at some of our choices.
Let's get back to the book, In the Moon of Red Ponies. Why In the Moon of Red Ponies?
Well, I was the student and friend of John Neihardt, the man who wrote Black Elk Speaks, and he influenced me a great deal as a young man and as a young writer. I knew him very well, my wife too. And of course, his book, Black Elk Speaks, makes use of the Oglala Sioux calendar, and the seasons were named for the events that occur in them. And so I kind of created this vision that Johnny American Horse has in The Moon of Red Ponies, a time when, in Johnny's mind, the bison will return to the earth, and he sees these red mustangs in his dream swarming over the plains, this alluvial plain that, when the world was brand new, like on the seventh day. You see, there's still places like that in Montana.
In Montana, yeah.
Oh, man, I tell you.
There's a kind of an atavistic thing about that, you know, harking back to a simpler time reminds me. Johnny tries to breed red ponies. Is that not true?
Yeah.
It's like the Jews in Israel trying to breed the spotless white heifer.
Yeah.
So that the Messiah will come or something. It's the same kind of an idea.
Yeah, it's the same idea exactly. And he refers to God as the everywhere spirit, and he ultimately, as we see, is a honest-to-goodness holy man.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm treading too heavy on the plot here, please let me know, and I'll back off. There's a guy named Carsten Mabus.
Yeah.
He's the guy who owns this corporation is screwing people over.
Yeah.
And for some reason or another, he's got a thing for Johnny American Horse. He wants to get Johnny American Horse for one reason or another. I don't want to say exactly why. But he sends a couple of thugs after him. And this is one of my favorite scenes in the whole book, because Johnny is not only a farmer and a kind of a mild guy with a little bit of a drinking problem, but he's also a Gulf War veteran. He has some skills, doesn't he?
Yeah, he was a Ranger.
You want to talk about that, or do you?
Well, these two guys are hitmen out of Detroit, and they think they're going to go on to the res and just, you know, grease this guy off of the planet, and they have quite a surprise. And if Carsten Mabus didn't learn a lesson the first time, he sends two other killers after Wyatt Dixon, which is the worst mistake these guys ever made in their lives.
Wyatt's weapon of choice is a 50 caliber Sharps buffalo rifle.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that Buffalo Bill used to use to kill buffalo. So it packs quite a wallop. And if it hits you, it just takes a chunk of you right out.
Yeah, this is one of those moments when you feel that really violence isn't always bad.
Do you get? I mean, it's funny. A lot of us panty waist liberals, you know, we deplore violence and all that stuff. But there's a kind of I don't want to say vigilante because that's really too strong. But there's a kind of a righteous fervor we get when we read a book like this, where the bad guys catch it in the neck, you know, and you say, I can't really talk about this, but I love it. Did you feel that way as well?
Oh yeah, sure. You know, I mean. You know, to not act in defense of the innocent is a worse act than violence itself. It is violence. It's like being a participant in it. It's like joining forces with evil. And I know that sometimes people believe that, look, think of it this way. Here's the ultimate contradiction: to denigrate policemen and at the same time to brag on not keeping a weapon in one's house. Well, who is to protect the man's family if he does not believe law enforcement can do it and then needs to feel good about himself at the expense of his loved ones? And I don't mean to indict others, but I don't think it's a reasonable way to think. If something is worth loving, by God, it's worth defending.
In the worst circle of Dante's hell, the offenders who take the deepest punishment are the betrayers and the people who did nothing to stop evil.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Odysseus is there because he's a betrayer.
Really?
Yeah, and what do they call them? There's a word that Dante Alighieri uses that I can't think of. The trimmers, the people who trim their sails in the face of a storm.
So, in other words, those who betray and those who
do nothing to stop evil are in the worst, the ninth circle of hell.
In the face of evil. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I read that. I read it when I was in high school.
Who didn't? Yeah.
Yeah, everybody read that.
That was a long time ago.
And didn't have an impure thought for 6 weeks.
Oh, really? I used to have dreams about Beatrice, so... I guess I could have had dreams about who Virgil, I guess, is the one who let him through.
That's right.
Right. Well, hey, how about that, huh? Not bad for an old guy.
Beatrice was Dante's lover, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
it. And he idealized her in the Divine Comedy as a spirit of mm-hmm. light and you know, a kind of an Immaculate Conception kind of a thing, yeah. But he was probably doing her, yeah.
His sonnets were addressed to Beatrice.
That's right. Okay, that's right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. See? Should have an education. It really helps. I want to talk a little bit about Romulus Finley and Amber Finley.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Romulus Finley, if there's any character in this book that falls desperately into the caricature mode, I would have to say it's Romulus Finley. I mean, you just load him up with all this bad stuff, don't you?
Well,
he's not that complex.
Billy Bob has moments when he likes him, and he's think a character that we would identify more with a study in pathos. He's the U.S. senator here who has an errant daughter. And
errant being that she won't do what he wants him to do.
Yes, yeah, correct. Yeah. And she, becomes the girlfriend of Johnny American Horse, which is unthinkable for Senator Finley. But he's one of those fellows who's for sale. He's
and also
one of
because
the best
he can't
characters write. I've ever written.
when all this eventuates, when the whole book comes to its climax, there are very few people left standing that haven't in some way compromised whatever ideals that they claim to have, including Billy Bob.
Mm-hmm.
He does something in the book that I find a bit shocking, and I won't tell what it is, but when we reach the end of the book, they say all's well that ends well. It ends well, but it all's really not that well at the end, is it?
Well, in my work, the characters come to resolutions about their own lives, but the world never changes because it would be unrealistic to indicate that to the reader. And I think, as Voltaire suggested in Candide, ultimately, the intelligent man or woman tends to his or her own garden. And so what people in my work always seek is redemption. They're always after the grail. It's always the same theme.
Do you a lot of mystery writers that I talk to, crime writers, even people who write true crime, one of the things they like about the genre itself is that they can create what seems to be order in a disorderly and chaotic world, and they can right the wrongs and make make the guilty suffer, when in fact, in reality, it doesn't always happen that way. Do you have that same feeling?
Well, I think the crime novel has replaced the sociological novel of the 1930s and 40s.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and those books, you see, really borrow their structure from Elizabethan tragedy. And so Ultimately, I know in my work, I think in those terms, in the construct of a novel, the five acts of the Greek or Elizabethan tragedy, the descent, then ultimately the restoration of order of some kind. But normally, at least in my own work, and I feel this in my own life, the order we find will never be found in a societal fashion. Anyone who wants to bet on people in doing things well in groups, I say, God bless him for his optimism. As I think Dave Robichaux says once, did you ever see a mob rush across town to do a good deed?
That's something to think about, actually.
My dad, I got a lot of these expressions from my dad, you know. And I never forget how he used to put things. He'd say, if everybody agrees on it, son, it's wrong.
So much for the voice of the majority, huh? This has always been delightful. Every time I talk to you, it's a wonderful experience. I've been speaking with James Lee Burke. The title of his 28th novel?
That's the 24th.
24th, uh-huh. Sorry. Well, right. I gave you a few more. Uh-huh. It's In the Moon of the Red Ponies, published by Scheiman & Schuster. You can come back here anytime.
Oh, it's great being back here. I enjoy very much being at your station. You do a great job here.
Thank you very much.
It's
appreciate
really a nice
that. James Lee
format.
Burke.